Chapter 37 Fort Besieged. Our cause needs defense, and its principal fort needs fortification. I now call soldiers to supply this need. Defend this fort, and the officer working within it for her church, the field, and the world. Mary Baker Eddy, 1907. Mrs. Eddy's lengthy reply to McClure's Magazine, Miscellany, page 308, was published in the January Journal and in the January 5th Sentinel. It was also republished in part or in toto throughout the country, along with many criticisms of McClure's and their methods. The Arena Magazine came forth with an article in its January issue entitled, quote, "The Recent Reckless and Irresponsible Attacks on Christian Science and Its Founder, with a Survey of the Christian Science Movement," end quote, which caused Mrs. Eddy to publish in the Sentinel a card of appreciation, Miscellany, page 316. She also wrote to her editor-in-chief, "Please reply to this in our Sentinel, this last paragraph of Mr. Flower's letter for me. Sign your name to it. Return letter to me." The Arena was the magazine which, a few years earlier, had published Josephine Woodbury's attacks upon Mrs. Eddy. McClellan explained in a January Sentinel. The Arena. Several years ago, after Mr. B. O. Flower had been forced out of the Arena, and it was in the hands of persons hostile to him and, as he says, to, quote, "all the interests that had founded the magazine," end quote, there appeared some articles in it against Christian Science and its distinguished leader. Therefore, it is possible that some Christian Scientists are under the impression that the management of the Arena is the same at the present time as it was when the articles referred to were published, and it is proper to state to our readers that this is not so. Mr. Flower returned to the Arena subsequent to the publication of these articles, and we are informed that, quote, "no one today who was in the least interested in the Arena had any hand whatever in the publication or circulation of the papers in question," end quote. We take pleasure in making this statement in order that the present editor and managers of the Arena may be relieved from blame, which should in no wise attach to them. Mr. Flower is conducting the magazine upon the lines of clean, high-class journalism, and we wish him the success which he deserves. Archibald McClellan. Before this was published, Chandler and Slott had brought George Glover and his daughter Mary to Washington, D.C., where they also provided for all their needs. They were posing as the Glovers' best friends and thoroughly convinced George, as well as his daughter, that they were sincerely concerned about his mother and Christian Science. It is not improbable that some of their accomplices were practicing the mental malpractice or black magic they accused the Revelator of practicing. By the time an interview with Mrs. Eddy at Pleasant View had been arranged for the Glovers on January 2nd, George and Mary were so mesmerized that they saw exactly what Chandler and Slott had told them they would see, rather than seeing Mrs. Eddy as she really was. In August of 1899, a few days after Josephine Woodbury had filed a libel suit against Mrs. Eddy, Calvin Fry had recorded in his diary, "After a night of agony, struggling with a sense of desertion from her students and her church at this hour of persecution and prosecution by Woodbury, this morning, August 6th, 99, Mrs. Eddy, while she was on her swing on the rare piazza at Pleasant View, heard these words as distinctly as if audibly spoken to her. Quote, "Thou art mine, saith the Lord of hosts. In the day when I make up my jewels, I will spare thee, as a man spareth his own son that serveth him." End quote. The Woodbury suit had dragged on and on, and several months later, Calvin recorded in his diary that Mrs. Eddy had called him Laura and Clara, and prophesied to us, saying, quote, "After we get through this court, the next will be that their horses will wade to their bellies in blood." End quote. Most likely, the leader had opened her Bible that morning to Revelation 14, beginning at verse 16. Quote, "And he that sat on the cloud thrust in his sickle on the earth, and the earth was reaped." End quote. The Woodbury case was not that harvest, but Mrs. Eddy foresaw that the next trial would be. This is verified in her response to the initial attack in November 1906, which response she entitled, quote, "Harvest," end quote, with the opening sentence, quote, "God hath thrust in the sickle, and he is separating the tares from the wheat," end quote. The leader had prophesied this trial 7 years before it began. She knew it would be severe, and by January of 1907, she had called a number of tried and true workers to Pleasant View, or back to Pleasant View, to meet this attack. Louis Strang was still there, and George Kinter, Joseph Mann, and Gilbert Carpenter were some who were called back to do mental work during this trying time. On January 7th, James P. Wilson, an attorney in Denver, Colorado, wrote to Mrs. Eddy, "After reading the McClure article and your reply, I take the liberty of addressing this letter to you. I think I see breakers ahead. You perhaps remember me as the Addy for your son George. I came here 3 years ago, and since then have not been your son's advisor, and we closed our business relations. But we are still very friendly, and I think much of him, as he has many attributes that command respect. He does not know I'm writing this, and has made no request of me to write you, but I write you believing I am doing the proper thing. Your son, Mr. Glover, has many letters from you in his possession. He has kept a copy of all letters written you, and has all your replies. You should have all those or many of those letters returned. I need not tell you why, but there is a reason why. You are making history. You need some of those letters. Your son is in want. His family is in want, unless you have done something for him lately. You built him a fine home, but he had no money to maintain it. You have done much for him, but we can't count the cost in dealing with our children. I need not tell you George has made mistakes. My boys make mistakes. But I do want you to get back many of your letters. Your son usually followed my advice. When he did, he made no mistakes. He sometimes did not take my advice and made some costly mistakes, but I think he will listen to me. Your work should not be interfered with, and no misunderstanding should arise in the future over matters which you can adjust now. If this is worthy of attention, I am pleased to be of some service to you. If not, you can consign this to the wastebasket. Immediately, the leader had Alfred Farlow and also Irving Tomlinson endeavor to retrieve her letters from George, who, at first, promised to return them. But George Glover was already totally under Chandler's influence, so the letters were given instead into Chandler's hands. The revelation of Jesus to John states, Revelation 10:7, "But in the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when he shall begin to sound, the mystery of God should be finished." Revelation 11:15, "And the seventh angel sounded, and there were great voices in heaven, saying, The kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever." After the seventh angel sounded, quote, "There appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun," end quote, "followed by the dragon endeavoring to devour the woman's child. Then the beast rose," quote, "up out of the sea." Elementary Latent Error, Science and Health, page 559. And next, the false prophet, both claiming to do great wonders that would equal or eclipse the great good brought forth by the womanhood of God. All this prophecy had seen fulfillment. All the earth knew of the woman and her work. Some had followed her, some had rejected her, and many had done nothing at all. But all knew of her, and, quote, "The time is come to reap, for the harvest of the earth is ripe," end quote. Revelation 15, verses 19 and 20. "And the angel thrust in his sickle into the earth, and gathered the vine of the earth, and cast it into the great winepress of the wrath of God. And the winepress was trodden without the city, and blood came out of the winepress, even unto the horse bridles." Mrs. Eddy knew the crucial hour that was upon the earth, and particularly upon all Christian Scientists, and was constantly at work to guide her followers through this trial, that they might emerge from it elevated and purified. But no one else saw the imperativeness of the hour. On the 12th of January, she gave this message to Lewis Strang. "If your mother and your best earthly friend directs work to be done in sense and science spiritual in the cause of Christ, why can't, won't you and other students, before this faithful always in his sight, do it? The calling of soul is man's highest example. This I know 40 years. Dear one, mother rejoices at your growth in his cause, and that is why she seeks always the chastening rod of his spirit for you. Do you understand this? Kinter and man will take the watch this night. Be you at work. If mother calls you, you will be ready. One mind, love over all, truth reigns." It was her very best students who most often received the mother's rebukes and the, quote, chastening rod of his spirit, end quote. The leader once wrote to Irving Tomlinson that she had rebuked poor Stetson more than any other student. Mrs. Stetson met every day with 25 of her students, all of whom were practitioners in her church. At these meetings, they discussed, quote, metaphysical points relating to Christian Science practice, end quote. And the teacher constantly impressed her students with the leader's spirituality and the great importance of following their leader. Mrs. Eddy received a great many letters of support as the newspaper attacks continued. But none was more appreciative than this letter of January 15th from First Church, New York. Beloved and revered leader, the world does not yet know you, but your steadfast, loyal, and watchful followers, the members of this church, together with your loving students and followers throughout the world, do know you. We are continually praising God for Christian Science, his great gift to us through you, its discoverer and founder. At this annual meeting of First Church of Christ Scientist, New York City, we beg to lay our treasures and our honors at your feet. We delight in striving to emulate your holy example and teaching through, quote, evil as well as good report, end quote. Ever trusting truth and love to enable us to follow you up the rugged heights of Christian Science, beyond the clouds and the thunderings of personal sense, into the calm, pure atmosphere of mind, the sunlight of love's presence. We have much reason to be humbly grateful for the prosperity in truth which has attended our flock during the past year. Christian Science mind healing has been demonstrated over all manner of sin and sickness, and many new members who at our last annual meeting knew nothing of Christian Science are rising to call you blessed. Jesus fed the hungry multitude. He blessed and broke the bread and gave to his disciples to give to the hungry, which they did. Dearly beloved leader, have you not prepared and broken the bread of God and given to your disciples? And have you not bidden them distribute to the multitude? We have been fed with the bread which you have broken with your own dear hands and given to us through your disciple. You tell us that this is the harvest hour. Indeed, so it seems to us. Blessings innumerable have been bestowed upon us as a church. Not one of the promises of the Bible has failed us when we have followed your teachings in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures and your other writings. The beauty and affluence of the divine mind is manifest in health and in the unity of the good and the true. Love for God and our brother man must increase as we near the white Christ. Who will be able to gather and care for the bountiful harvest which God had prepared for his anointed and her followers? Quote, the harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few. End quote. We rejoice in the triumph of truth over the late attacks made upon you. Our Master said, quote, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. End quote. In this century, the call to meet the enemy of Christ has been met by you, and throughout the world the cry has rung out, quote, Mary Baker Eddy lives and loves and conquers hate and the haters with, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do, end quote. We bow in humble acknowledgement of your Christian spirit and your divine power to reflect omnipotent love, which shuts the lion's mouth and is enabling you to pass through the furnace 7 times heated with no evidence of the experience, save a purer love, exalting you to horrible heights of spiritual supremacy over the material world, the flesh, and all the claims of evil. We are mute before such unparalleled meekness and might, and rejoicingly follow with devoted obedience and love one whom we delight to serve and honor as God's chosen messenger to draw us to, quote, Emmanuel, or God with us, end quote, to reveal to us the invisible Christ, who is, quote, Lord of lords and King of kings, end quote. Lovingly and faithfully, First Church of Christ Scientist, New York City, E. F. Hatfield, First Reader. These New York students truly appreciated their leader and accepted all she said. But their understanding of, quote, the harvest hour, end quote, differed greatly from that which the leader saw and foresaw. She had said in Science and Health, quote, the higher truth lifts her voice, the louder will error scream, end quote. And her voice was the voice of truth and had been lifted higher beginning in August 1906, at the beginning of the Ascension era. She had also written in Science and Health that the, quote, talking serpent typifies mortal mind, end quote. Quote, when nearing its doom, this evil increases and becomes the great red dragon, swollen with sin, inflamed with war against spirituality, end quote. Her soldiers needed training for this warfare, else they would all become casualties on the battlefield. Many were called to Pleasant View in 1907 for this training, but sad to say, some were not responsive. Susie Lang had been in one of Mrs. Eddy's earliest classes in 1882, and she had been a member of the leader's second normal class in 1885, but she appreciated not the opportunity to serve the leader. When Mrs. Eddy asked her to come to Pleasant View in 1907, Miss Lang began outlining the great needs of the field in Lawrence. Finally, Mrs. Eddy said, quote, the Lawrence field needs you more than I do, end quote. When Susie said, quote, do you need me, mother, end quote, the leader replied, quote, I need only what God sends me. I need you, but I need you somewhere else than here, end quote. Adelaide Still wanted very much to come to Pleasant View, but perhaps it was only human desire. If God had sent her, the leader would not have rejected her. As it was, at their first interview, she merely asked Miss Still how the slaying was in Massachusetts and how long she had been a practitioner before dismissing her. Miss Still's disappointment may have helped to fit her to serve the leader, for later in the spring of 1907, she accepted a menial position in the Pleasant View household. The leader increased the mental work, as well as the mental workers at Pleasant View. And she directed the work of each beginning at 5 a.m. as this watch given to Louis Strang on January 22nd indicates. Hold the ground. Life, truth, love, reign, this and every hour. No fear, no night dreams, no daydream. Malicious animal magnetism is not power. Only reality, God and His will, is done on this earth and at Pleasant View. Keep the line. Hold your aim. Thought externalized is the guide. Please receive from Mr. Carpenter the texts for thinking, and I will name the hour in the morning, beginning 5 a.m. The above named watch is uniform. I do not ask you to treat anyone. I only show you what is in belief and man's daily duty to God. The February McClures featured another attack on Mrs. Eddy. Many of those who joined in the persecution of God's chosen witness truly knew not what they were doing, but they had put money in God's place in their lives. Hiram Crafts, Mrs. Eddy's first student, had written a statement about his pupilage for Mrs. Eddy's Footprints Fadeless in 1901. But Hiram had died in 1906. His wife had been approached by McClure's and possibly New York World reporters, and she wrote on February 2nd, "Dear Mrs. Eddy, now Hiram has gone, the people want me to tell them your history while you lived with us, the one that will pay me the most money. If you will pay me the most, I will keep still, keep my mouth closed. You can have your first choice. I want you to be quick about it, not to delay, for I don't want to be teased to death. With regards, Mary W. Crafts." It is not hard to imagine the kind of stories Mary Crafts, quote, sold, end quote, to the press. It has been said that Mark Twain saw an opportunity to make some money, and once again, he joined the persecutors with an article in the Sunday Herald, February 3rd. The New York World employed Josephine Woodbury's attorney, Frederick Peabody, to assist Chandler. On February 18th, Peabody attacked Christian Science with a drastic bill in the Massachusetts legislature to regulate Christian Science practice. Mrs. Eddy was thinking of her son in Washington, D.C., and of his being influenced against her. On February 6th, she wrote to Edward Everett Norwood of that city, "Beloved student, my son is not a Christian Scientist. He, Mr. George W. Glover, is said to be in Washington. I wish he would return to his home in Lee, Dakota. The MAMs are at work to prevent it. I am giving him a large sum to help him at his home in Lee, Dakota. To meet the lies, let me inform you. After his father passed on, I went immediately to my paternal home. After I thought of such a thing, I asked my father to help me to get some of my husband's property, for I had not anything of it and would not sell his slaves. My father went to a man in Bow who had done business of that kind in the South and asked him how he should accomplish getting me what belonged to me as his wife. The man said to him, quote, Under the present laws of the South, she can recover none of his property. It would take 8 years to even get out an execution." End quote. So Father dropped the matter, and I never received any means to help me in that way. Please assert this if it becomes necessary. Lovingly yours, Mary Baker Eddy. Edward Norwood called on the Glovers at their hotel, and they returned the call. But the meetings were to no avail. Mr. Norwood said that he, quote, could plainly see that the poor old man was being worked, end quote. The large sum Mrs. Eddy was giving to her son was $125,000 and was being set up as a trust fund, giving George and his wife an annual income for the rest of their lives. No doubt Attorney Wilson's letter had caused her to see the necessity for this. The leader was also giving thought to all of her financial affairs. On the morning of February 12th, she said to Laura Sargent, quote, "Laura, I am going to put business out of my mind. I cannot go on being pulled one way and the other by material and spiritual matters. I am going with God." End quote. 2 days later, Calvin Fry wrote her a memorandum commending her suggestion to transfer her property to a, quote, "Christian Science Association of Home and Foreign Missions," end quote, from which she could draw what money she needed. Within 2 or 3 weeks, she made a final decision on another plan for her property. The most important event in February of 1907 was announced in the Sentinel of February 2nd. The Christian Science textbook. An edition of Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, printed from new plates, has just been issued. This edition contains many important changes and additions by the author. The leader received a great many letters thanking her for this new revision, but perhaps none was more appreciative than this letter of February 2nd from her final proofreader, William D. McCracken. Consecrated leader and teacher, again, you have put the world under obligation in a notable way by your recent revision of Science and Health, the book which heals and reclaims. While efforts were being made to identify Christian Science with the prince of this world, you were lovingly and patiently at work, blessing your enemies by this revision. I see in this action of yours a new example of the right way of returning good for evil. A life like yours, filled with such acts of charity, must be instinct with happiness and supreme joy. The little glimpses I get of God as life assure me that you have found the secret of perennial gladness. Although this revised edition of Science and Health was not issued until February of 1907, it was copyrighted in 1906. It would appear that after the leader had entered the Ascension era, she took her child, Science and Health, with her, for this is the last copyrighted edition of her textbook. She made many more changes and additions from 1907 through 1910, but never again applied for a copyright. The book had risen above human law and was free, protected by God's law. The leader was trying every day to open the eyes of her students. On February 15th, she said to them, too, quote, "Not arrange things and then go to God, but go to God first," end quote. Then she opened her Bible and read Luke 24:1-16. "And they found the stone rolled away from the sepulchre. And they entered in and found not the body of Jesus. He is not here, but is risen. It was Mary Magdalene and other women which told these things unto the apostles. And their words seemed to them as idle tales, and they believed them not. Jesus himself drew near and went with them. But their eyes were holden that they should not know him." When the leader stopped reading, she said, quote, "Those things are occurring again. My words seem as idle tales to you, but I speak truth," end quote. But her disciples' eyes were holden, and they did not know her. Her lesson for her household workers 2 days later, February 17th, was, "There are no lies. All is mind and governs. What is matter? Nothing. Mortal mind is matter. It cannot talk. Then hold to mind, and the rest will take care of itself. The rest is nothing. This material is all nothing. Life is divine, immortal, and there is no other life. That is all the life there is, and is ours." On February 23rd, the leader said to her household, quote, "Stand with God, and you will stand with Mother. Stand with Mother, and you will stand with God," end quote. And on February 26th, she gave them this lesson. "There is but one way through, and only one way through, and that is to unself. It is my unselfed love that has made a success of this cause for the world. Can you get rid of a lie and not get rid of it? No. Is it a lie that there is life, substance, and intelligence in matter? Yes. Then unself it. Everyone must do this. There is too much looking out for self instead of others. This is the trouble with the teaching of today and why there is so much erroneous teaching being done, not unselfed enough. You cannot teach Christian Science in that way. You can say over the words, but unless you prove it, you are not teaching, imparting. Prove it in healing the sick and casting out sin. I pray and watch in the little details. Someone must, as good is expressed, in the minutiae of things." The leader had risen above matter, and she was doing all in her power to teach, quote, "the way," end quote, to her dedicated disciples. But nearly half a century elapsed before this was seen and understood. It was in 1953 that an earnest student, Herbert W. Eustace, wrote and published, quote, "Mrs. Eddy did everything she could to drive it home to you and me that we are not in the Christian era, the era of matter, but that we are in the Christian Science era, the era of mind. We are in the ascension era." End quote.